extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire. From the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Charlie Davies, David Goss. 1-0. It wasn't impressive, let's say, in performance standards. We'll get to that for U.S. Men's National Team. It was disappointing for Canada. They thought they might have had an opportunity here, and they might have had calls gone a little bit different, had the first 20 seconds gone a little bit different. We're here to break it all down as Group B concludes. The United States finish atop the group. Of course, they needed a win to do so. Greg Berhalter and the boys got it. That means, in all likelihood, now look, Mexico's got to handle business against El Salvador tonight, but in all likelihood, the U.S. will avoid Mexico until, both sides hope, the final. Canada, meanwhile, looks like they'll be on that side.
Whoa, dude, respect to Alex Roldan right now. You don't know what's going to happen tonight.
That's, no, I have complete respect. I got it on, you know, I'm ready to go tonight for El Salvador, Mexico. El Salvador has 6. Mexico have 4 points. This could be huge. This could be a huge difference. Give me your one word before we get going here. Doyle, start me off. What's the one word for the U.S. side of this performance?
Resolute. It was kind of a crappy performance, but Canada never really felt all that close to scoring. And I think the back line has to and some of the deep midfielders probably have a lot to do with that. So even though there was more bad than good, I think, to take away from this game, they didn't buckle and they kept the clean sheet. And so it wasn't pretty, but it was resolute.
Charlie, we've got a lot of stuff on here. Uninspired, basically they're all uninspired. I'm going, some of these I can't say. I put out the one word and I'm like, ooh, can't say that one.
I pulled one out of the thread that I thought was good, which is enough. We did a Twitter Spaces before the game talking about what it was, and I thought this was a good opportunity for both teams to have a must-win game where nothing else matters and show that you could do that. And nothing about the way the U.S. did it wasn't impressive or inspiring, but that was what I thought the task was for these young players to show at this level that they could get through with the result that was needed, and they did.
I'm going to go with satisfactory. Considering they got the job done, they won the game. This was the toughest opponent in the group. We all knew there was a buildup to this match. Greg Berhalter rolled out a two-striker system, which I never thought we'd see with Daryl Dike and Jossie Zardes. It didn't work because I think we also knew that. And and that was the ramifications of when you roll out this formation. For me, it wasn't strong enough. There weren't enough connections. The passing wasn't fluid. It also wasn't accurate because they were missing left and right. And I just think against the Canada, you can get away with this. Against the Mexico, you cannot. And you would be punished.
Against this Canada.
Yeah, I was going to say, there might be a different Canada.
Well, yeah, exactly. But my point is, they got the job done. Again, just like we've seen throughout this group stage, yet you beat up on a really poor Martinique side, really one that's they were discombobulated throughout the match. Haiti had their chances. Canada, the best team in the other best opponent in the group. I think Canada had the majority of the possession, but the U.S. got the result in their top of the group.
What's Canada's word in this one, Dave, as they think about this? I'm thinking of a lot of words that go along with VAR or referee or just wasted. This was an opportunity, I feel, and they had it at the – they had it in their hands. The first 20 seconds didn't go well, but they showed more by far than the U.S. did.
Yeah, I think frustration is the big word, right? The opportunity they had that they weren't able to take advantage of, the way they started the game, the injuries that we don't know the extent of, but right now could affect the entire tournament now, which was a key for Herdman, who said this is a huge game. He built it up a lot, but he finished all of his press conferences but the key is to get into the knockout stages in our best place. Which I don't feel that that's the case if these injuries are for real. And then they created opportunities that they just weren't able to take advantage of. So I think frustration's the big one for Canada in my group chats and everything. You know, most of the Canada fans said we played better, but we didn't have enough.
Was that a PK?
Yes.
I mean, that's what Canada fans are asking.
I'll tell you right now, yes, it was a penalty. The hand fighting, which I think someone mentioned, oh, it could be a foul. No, it's not a foul. But when a defender like Walker Zimmerman dives into the legs of Ricky Larea, it's a pen. Clear and obvious to me. It was 100% a pen. Smart defending by Zimmerman, because you are beat, and maybe there is that chance that the ref doesn't call the PK, which he didn't. And I'm shocked it didn't go to VAR. I'm really shocked.
I think that's got to be, Charlie, something to do with the way it was called on the field.
Yeah.
Of going back to that clear and obvious threshold. Now, one of the things I've talked about in the lead up to this tournament is really the only refereeing crews that have experience week to week in league with video review and being on these in these situations on these crews are from MLS and Liga MX. We had a Mexican referee in this match. They're experienced with that, but I think that original call really changed it, and I agree. I don't think the hand fighting was there. Doyle, Canada was the better team. Is that a fact, or is that debatable?
No, I think that's a fact. But usually when the other team controls the game state for 90 minutes, you're going to have more of the ball. Like, the team's playing from behind, the impetus is on them to carry the game and to create something against what is usually a back line that'll sit pretty deep. And they got into some good spots. But again, it goes back to, I think the U.S. defended resolutely, and Canada maybe, I mean, they lack a little bit of magic in the final third. Now, if Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David are there, and that probably, the equation probably ends up different, as does the scoreline. But like, that's what World Cup qualifying is going to be, right? Like, Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies aren't going to be able to play every single minute. John Herdman is trying to learn about his group in the same way that Greg Berhalter is trying to learn about his. And I think he learned some good stuff today. But I think some of the data points were negative as well. And it gives him more to work on, you know, as they go throughout this Gold Cup and hopefully make a deep run here.
So for this team, Stephen Estacio would have helped that as well. And Mark mm-hmm. Anthony Kay being available for the full 90, right? He's sitting on a yellow card. You don't want to risk him. So they played him, I think it was the last 15. That was it. I think those two players would help that. For Canada, big picture, we talked about, what does the Gold Cup mean? It means, what can you figure out about World Cup qualifying? They have a game changer in Tejan Buchanan that they didn't have like 3 weeks ago. I didn't know that he could do this at this level for this team. And he did it against the U.S.
I did.
Charlie, you're better than me. When's that new? How is that new? That's not something we've learned in Gold Cup. So that's a huge moment for Herdman in that, you know, Alphonso Davies was going to probably have to play every game at left back or left wing back for him. Now he has a player in Tejan Buchanan who could take some of those minutes. Can you maybe split David and Fonzie in big games where they don't start together when you have that rotation in three games? It feels like there's more options today, especially the way now Alistair Johnson's playing. Kamal Miller, this was his best game I think he's ever played for the Canadian national team. We've seen it in MLS.
You could say ever in any professional.
I think we've seen it at times for Orlando and Montreal, but yeah. So I think there's a ton of options that Canada's gotten out of this, but this group today, especially with the injuries, didn't have it. Now, I would say the U.S., I thought they played the way they wanted to play for the first 30 minutes. Everything from the hydration break on changed, and that's when Herdman swapped Richie and Tejan. He swapped their wings, and also because of the IO injury, he brought Osorio on a few minutes before that, and I think a lot of that changed the way Canada was able to play.
What did you see in the tactical matchup here, Doyle? I mean, how much of one was there? How much did adjustments change the game?
I mean, the adjustments ended up changing the game a lot, and I don't think it was all scripted. I mean, obviously, injuries were huge. If Walker Zimmerman doesn't get hurt, I think it's probably a lot less nervy out there from the U.S. because Donovan Pines is just not an international caliber player. So that it ended up making the U.S. adjustments, whatever ones Berhalter was able to make, look less effective than I think they would have been otherwise. And the, you know, the same goes in reverse for Canada. Like, it looked brilliant for Canada with Osorio coming on. It gave them more purchase with the ball in central midfield, and he was able to open things up from the half spaces a little bit. I mean, they're a good team, and Herdman did more in terms of changing the game than Berhalter did. But I kind of wonder if Berhalter, his whole point was to bring it back to what David was saying. The whole point was, all right, I'm tossing you guys into the pool at the deep end here. These are the types of games, if you're going to help us in World Cup qualifying, you're going to have to figure out how to win these games. And I think guys like James Sands and Miles Robinson, Matt Turner to a lesser degree, because he didn't have to do a ton, Shaq Moore, obviously Jossie, those guys, I think, helped themselves because of the way they played in this one. I'm not sure that a lot of other guys beyond them, maybe Sam Vines as well, I'm not sure a lot of other guys beyond them can come out of this one saying, yeah, we really figured it out. We knew how to handle what was being thrown at us. It did end up becoming much more of a rear guard action.
Shaq Moore with the goal 20 seconds in. I think that's the fastest in U.S. men's national team history. I was there for the second fastest, Clint Dempsey against Ghana. That was a good way to start. Chance creation after that, a little bit iffy. We have some Gerald Dike questions we'll get to in a second. Charlie, who was the most impressive performer for the U.S.? Who's the standout? Who gained the most ground in the fight for World Cup qualifying or just additional games in this tournament?
In this match, it was Miles Robinson. In this exact match, but I think the timing of his challenges – one stands out to me in the 92nd minute, the 1v1 versus Tejan, and not diving in because Tejan did that little hesitation step, which he typically gets 99% of defenders to dive in there or just to get them off balance. Miles Robinson did not and continued to usher the ball out of bounds. I thought he was fantastic today. It was probably it's definitely the best performance I've seen from him in a U.S. men's national team shirt. But that was encouraging. I needed to see a performance like that from Miles Robinson to say, okay, this is someone who can be in the mix as a center back with the U.S. men's national team A team.
And he did it, I think, in two ways. The first 30 minutes was him playing high, winning the ball in counter presses, being on top of Larin so that Canada couldn't break. And you saw how willing and comfortable he was stepping in with possession. He had one where he picked it up, laid it off for Dike, and he was ready to go before Dike turned it over. So that was half the game. And then the other half was sitting back on your heels, as Charlie said, and defending in your own box alongside Pines and Sands, who have never been here before and are less experienced than you. And he carried that. So I thought he showed in a lot of different ways that he had stepped up and was ready to be a part of the national team. So I agree with you that Miles Robinson, this was a big day for him.
I have to kick it to you on this one, Doyle. Where in your estimation, this is from Shane McFarlane on Twitter, does Sands sit in the center back hierarchy if everyone is healthy? What did he show in this game and the last game? What has changed, if anything, for James Sands?
I mean, the same defensively, he showed the same thing, I think, that Miles Robinson did, that he can hang in a game like this against a CONCACAF team that, you know, you're going to see in World Cup qualifying. And what Sands brings is the ability to play in the middle of a back line, so that flexibility to go to a back five instead of a back four. And he's much more comfortable getting the ball on his foot and sort of stepping into or past the opposing front line and into their sort of midfield shape in order to compress them. And the difference now between James Sands and James Sands last year and the year before is when he gets into those spots, he doesn't just settle for square and backwards passes. He was actually, if you go back and you watch that first half hour, he was able to step up into the play and hit some really good line-breaking passes. Like, I'm not talking like Pirlo stuff, but like crisp and to feet as the guy's checking into the space so that he has room to turn and drive forward. And that was something that we really didn't used to see that from James Sands. And it's very much a part of his game now, to the point where it's like, if we're playing a 4-3-3 and we need a true number six to sit in front of that back line and protect the center backs, and Tyler Adams isn't available, I think I want James Sands. Kellen Acosta doesn't really do that job. We've talked about that. Gianluca Busio has shown over two games he is not physically ready to be an international caliber player. I think Jackson Ewell has had the same issue over the past couple of months. Sands has not had that issue. Now, he's not – I don't think he's ever going to be a game-breaking passer in the way that we have seen Busio and Ewell occasionally be at the club level. But we don't need him to be a game-breaking passer. We need him to be tidy. We need him to be, you know, flawless defensively. And we need him to get the ball onto the feet of the guys who can break the game open. And frankly, I trust James Sands to do that a lot now after the past 180 minutes.
You're looking for the Rico Clark on turf in Trinidad and Tobago performance from him.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, like, it doesn't need to be that. It doesn't need to be that. We all remember Rico in Trinidad and Tobago, man. That was otherworldly.
Yeah. Besides that, though, do you think there's a chance now if Walker's out that Sands plays in a flat four as a center back?
Here's the thing. I don't really, because there's John Brooks, there's Miles Robinson, there's Richards, there's McKenzie, there's Miazga.
But I mean, in this tournament.
In this tournament, there is. Yeah, I mean, and why not? This tournament, like, everybody online right now is losing their minds upset with the performance, but this tournament is not about the performance necessarily. It's about getting wins, and it's about identifying guys who can help in World Cup qualifying. And I think that James Sands and Miles Robinson and Shaq Moore have all showed that they, and I'll say Matthew Hoppe as well, have all showed that they can help in World Cup qualifying. And I care infinitely more about that than I do about the kind of a heat check of a tactical decision that Berhalter had not really working out.
Well, the flip side of the positives is that the negatives tell you maybe what you can't lean on in World Cup qualifying as well. Of like, hey, that's not going to be an option for me. So just eliminate that from the jump. Now, Daryl Dike is definitely going to be an option, but we have a lot of tweets, a lot of questions. I think a lot of people talking about just, you know, I'll go to NCHC Pod. He said, did Dike drop some stock in this game, or has he done enough to keep the starting spot in the next one? I mean, what did you see from Daryl? Charlie, I know this is DK Stan Hive right here, but that was not his best.
It wasn't, and you wouldn't expect him to be at his best every single game. You're always going to have a game where you drop in form. Again, this wasn't the typical one striker high with a number of players underneath for support. This was playing with two, and he had never played with Jossy Zardes from the start. So, and I don't think they complement each other well on top of that. So I do think in this instance, he is still the number one striker. If he's healthy, now we don't know the extent of his shoulder injury, but he's the number one striker at the moment in this Gold Cup team. You know, I think when you look across all strikers in the pool, you want whoever's going to be playing who's confident in scoring goals and is fit. At the moment, he has stood out to be that player. You look at the other players in this position who are fighting for the starting spot. Josh Sargent, who has started preseason relatively hot. This is a player who needs to be in a team where he's going to be playing as the nine every single game and the repetition and not playing all over the place and more than not defending because of the position of his club having to fight for relegation. You want him getting chances. So
you can say Werder Bremen are trash. You can say Werder Bremen are trash.
Yeah, they're not strong. I'll keep it at that. But I'm excited.
Dordal's internet cuts out. Werder Bremen has taken down. Yeah, right.
I'm excited to see. He's a work in progress. Yeah. Daryl Dike by no means is a finished product ready to bang in goals at a World Cup. He still has to work on his touch. I think that's one of the areas where he needs to drastically improve. That first touch, sometimes when he's dribbling, he loses the ball, you know, it runs away from him. So I think as he sharpens his first touch and his awareness in those tight spaces, we're going to start to see him start to bang in more goals.
I just want you all to know that for the last half hour, it's been nonstop crying above me. So I appreciate
Is it Cameron or Wyatt who watched
it's
the
both.
Game?
No, it's
tell
both.
Tell them to get a grip, man. It's just exactly. The Gold Cup.
No, Doyle, that's not what it is. They realize Tejan's gone. They're Revs fans. Yeah. Gotcha. They thought they had a shot at MLS Cup. They watched this game and they're like,
well, actually, one of them's a big Akinola guy. The other one's all about Kyle Larin, and those injuries just got him shook up. They're like, how could I watch Canada without those two in the knockout rounds? TBD on that. John Herdman did have an interesting quote that I just saw Joshua Klocka put out. Quote, I'm pissed with the result, but happy with the performance. What do you think Greg Berhalter would say about this as we wait to see his quotes come down? Doyle, what do you think he's thinking after a game like this? Is he okay? He's like, yeah, that was the test that I was looking for, and we got the job done, so onward and upward.
I think he'll be a little miffed at the lack of game control through central midfield. And while Charlie's right in that playing with two center forwards kind of seeds that a little bit. That doesn't entirely excuse the performances from Busio and Acosta and Legette. Legette, I think, started well, but then sort of faded out. Acosta never found the game. No. Like the other day when we were praising him up and down, like, he was incredible. That guy didn't show up. And this has been the knock on Kellen Acosta throughout his career. He has the talent to be a $10 million central midfielder, but he doesn't bring it to bear for 90 minutes and ends up chasing shadows. And for him to do that is a lot more damaging, frankly, than for a 19-year-old Gianluca Busio to do that in his second or third U.S. cap. Like, Busio was just – he kept getting beat, and he would stay beat, and that drives me nuts. But he's 19 – and he's learning the position. So I give him kind of, not a mulligan, but like a little bit of rope. With Acosta to do that is really frustrating. And I'm sure Greg Berhalter is as frustrated about that as I am. So I think he'll focus on that. I do hope he goes back to the drawing board a little bit and thinks about, you know, going back to the 4-3-3, getting some wingers out there. You know, certainly you can play Christian Roldan on the wing and seeing if that works.
Interesting. So Roldan, who else can you play out there? Would you play like a Shaq Moore there or a George Bello?
I mean, Shaq Moore has played there a bunch for his club team, but I'm not sure I would do that. Roldan, remember, Roldan has played on the wing for literally an MLS Cup winner for that.
But who's the other winger?
Well, you still have Hoppy and Joachini. So
yeah, Hoppy and Joachini and Jonathan Lewis. I would give Jonathan Lewis another shot at it at this point. Okay. I mean, like that, you brought these guys for a reason, right?
For the practice squad. That's why you brought them. Because you have to for training purposes.
Look ahead. They got a full week of training to the U.S. men's national team. Same for Canada. What do you think Greg Berhalter will work towards? In particular, thinking in terms of Walker Zimmerman. If he's not there, that was the whole basis of this team defensively coming into this tournament. Would it be Miles? It would be Walker. That was basically preordained. Greg sort of said that. And now you lose one of them. How will he set up? Will he stick with three in the back and have Donovan Pines in against a Jamaica or a Costa Rica? Will he go back to two? How's the midfield constructed? Will we see Eric Williamson get another shot? That was surprising to me to not see him have an opportunity in this match. Does Busio stay? How do you figure out the wings? Do you go with two forwards? Like, where does this go now that it's become must-win? I mean, this was a must-win game to get where you want to go and to get opposite of Mexico, but they were through. We're now on to win or you're out, and the U.S. doesn't go out in quarterfinals of Gold Cups, not if they don't want to hear about it, at least.
I mean, they don't even go out in semifinals.
Oh, they have, Charlie. I've been there. I've been to third-place games. I've seen the misery.
But that's the standard. So you're going to hear about it if the U.S. isn't in a final, especially if Mexico is in the other bracket and you wouldn't face them to the final. If you lose to Mexico in the semifinal, okay, you know, people will still give you grief and slack, but not as if you get to a final and then you lose to Mexico, which is what everyone is expecting the U.S. to get to a final to play against Mexico.
So look into the future, guys. How do you get there? Look a week's time down the road.
I think the first step is you hope that Jamaica outplays Costa Rica, and so that you can play Costa Rica in the next round. That would be the first plan if I was the U.S. But I think you look at a midfield. I think you have to bring Eric Williamson in for this next round to have someone who is willing to take over the game, who's willing to push play a little bit, and can physically handle the battles that we just didn't see Busio able to do in 50-50s throughout this game. So I think that's a big one. You have to decide if it's DK or Zardes. They just can't play together. Both of them do the same thing, and neither of them look comfortable playing off each other. So even if it is two forwards, I think it has to be Joachini or Hoppy.
DK today looked like the player everyone pretends Jossie is. With his and just like having no idea how to positively impact the game. That's what the haters on Twitter pretend that Jossie is. And if you go back and you watch this game and you watch Jossie's hold-up play compared to DK's hold-up, it was night and day.
But then you look at when Zardes is over on the left a little when DK's up top, and Zardes looks lost in that space. And he's slow, and he's methodical. So whatever it is, whoever it is, it has to be one of them. It can't be both of them. So I think those are two of the big keys of what you want to figure out coming out of this one. And then the other ones, I think a lot of them rely on the injuries. You know, if you don't have Walker, if you don't have DK, then that changes a whole lot in what you're going to do.
Yeah, big news there. Daryl DK looked like he might have taken a hand to the face, but he fell down awkwardly, was favoring that left side, I believe it was, for the rest of this game. What's the big lesson going into the knockout round? Like, if you look at a must-win game,
don't change the formation. Do not change the formation from the one that you previously played in going into a big match. That would be my takeaway, because you're not setting up the team to succeed given the players that you have. If this was a dynamic partnership up top with DK and Zardes, I'd say go ahead. I love a two-striker system when you have two players that complement each other so well. They both do the same sort of thing. They hold up the ball and they make runs in behind. They're not great with their feet. They're not going to really beat you on the dribble. It was almost like you're playing two of the exact same type of players, and it didn't work. They didn't have the support in the midfield either with Busio, Acosta, and Legette. They weren't being able to be dynamic to provide chances, to play them into the channels, to provide support, them playing off each other. It does not work. We can all come to understand they need to play in a system that supports the lone striker underneath, and there's more presence in the midfield for them to have possession. That's why Canada ran them in the second half. They didn't have enough to win the ball back, and they had to drop deep and settle on the 1-0 win. So for me, I would like to see Eric Williamson in the midfield. And, you know, we've seen what he does in Portland. A player who's a ball winner, he can keep possession, he can get out of tight spaces. That's what they needed in this match. I think that would have been a tremendous asset if he was in the midfield for this one.
Yeah, I agree with Charlie there. I mean, the thing Williamson does, and Gassman, we talked about this on the pregame space, when he gets on the ball, he's able to drive it forward off the dribble and put the opposing defense under pressure where they have to make a decision. They have to either step to the ball or they have to play for the passing lanes. And nobody in that midfield today was doing that. Nobody on the field was really doing that for the U.S. other than Robinson a little bit when he would step into the midfield on the ball. And, like, I don't think that's ideal. Williamson offers a different type of look from that position than anybody else. And I think it was something that it could have maybe tilted the balance of this game a little bit. And I certainly hope we get to see him from the start in the quarterfinals, because it was just badly missing for the U.S. today.
Now, in those first 30 minutes, the U.S. played with a level of intensity and pressing that it felt like that would create chances on its own.
Yes.
And then they completely fell off. Whether that is the mental idea of, well, we have a lead to lose now, whether it was just Tejan and Richie Larea starting to get behind people and the team getting nervous, Zimmerman being out and maybe less confidence in the midfield and forward line to stay higher, whatever it was, it changed. Now, if you were to go into a quarterfinal and you were to play that way from the start and be able to sustain it, then there's a chance that the U.S. could create chances out of something like that, plus set pieces, which they were not dangerous on today, which was a little upsetting. There wasn't really a ton of creativity, or it felt like a ton of focus on being dangerous on those set pieces. All of those things can help you for the next round. So Eric Williamson isn't the only fix to those ideas.
No, but he's not. It seems to be a formation, though, as well. And I will throw in, you look at Canada's backline. We talked about how poor they are when it comes to 1v1 defending, how they give up mistakes. You didn't see that because there was no wide play. So, you know, you had the occasional the first minute of the game when Shaq Moore gets up there to score. But other than that, you weren't seeing the isolation where Canada had Tejan Buchanan isolated, trying to get him 1v1. At times it worked. But where was that from the U.S.? If you had that, then you're pulling Vitoria out to defend, and he doesn't have the pace. He doesn't have the legs to go out wide, and then you would have seen the dominoes start to fall for Canada, because they're all out of sorts when you start moving them around. When you use those wide areas, when you have dynamic attacking players, that's when you start causing Canada problems, and we didn't see enough of that.
Who were you more confident making a run deep in this tournament, the U.S. or Canada?
The U.S.
Wow.
Yeah. And the out for Canada is obviously the side of the bracket that you assume they will be on. Shout out to El Salvador. See if you can get something done tonight, boys. Just see. But, I mean, I think it's a realistic question. We have news from John Herdman. Kyle Larin just had a dead leg, it sounds like. He should be okay in a week. Io, that's a little more problematic, he says. That's his word. It's a bit more problematic. And that doesn't sound great. Toronto FC fans can't love that. Who would you go with, Dave?
I think it's a legit question. Charlie, I can understand you being quick on the answer, just like the history we have. And I think there's a level of confidence against most of the opponents that we're going to see that the U.S. will get a result, and that seems to sometimes grind us through in Gold Cups. But I think we came into this tournament, and I didn't feel like this was a great U.S. team, and that wasn't the purpose of this. It's a lot of pieces that have never played together, have never performed at this level, and I didn't love the way the whole group was put together. Then you lose Paul Ariola, I think it got even harder because of the way these players are set up. If Kyle Larin is healthy, I don't think it's ridiculous to think that Canada has a better shot at getting further in this tournament.
I mean, Canada has a more talented team. I do like this, even missing David and Davies, this version of Canada, I think right now is more talented than this version of the United States.
And you have more cohesion. You have a base to build it off of. I mean, that midfield three, if we had seen it, which we didn't in this game, is probably the best in this tournament of any team. You have Tejan, who's the
best. Mexico's is better.
Come on, dude.
Mexico's is better.
Ante is so five years ago.
They have to play Costa Rica or Jamaica, who I think would really give Canada a game. You know, I think the U.S. will be able to handle whoever they have to play, but I'm not sure.
I think
so
the U.S.
Sure
should be worried about Jamaica, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. They should be worried about every team they play. but I think they'll be able to cause more problems for Canada. I'm not so certain of Canada's back line. But we'll see.
The thing is Jamaica has ceded possession in a lot of their games, even when they're favorites, and are dangerous in transition, which is fine. But I think it sort of fits to Canada. And yes, you are right. Right? You have Decordova Reed and Leon Bailey running at Stephen Vitoria and Alistair Johnson. Some dangerous moments will happen, although Johnson was good again today. He's been really impressive. But look at the U.S. What's it going to be, Donovan Pines? Yeah, James Stan starting at that position? Like, I don't know that we could be super confident about it for the U.S. And on the flip side, I don't know that we could dominate possession and create chances like Canada get. Obviously, the ability to face Mexico earlier or later shifts pretty much all of this convo.
Yeah, that's the math that matters. Got to handle your business and avoid Mexico and get to the final and see what happens. We're going to get out of here. One final thought from everybody. The last information or feeling or look ahead that you have dwelling inside your brain. We're going to be back on Monday for the full extra time to cover week 13. It's incredible how much is happening right now. We didn't even mention something that might have happened in Atlanta earlier. Guy behind to out. We will lead the show with that tomorrow. So tune in for that. Anyway, listen to podcasts on YouTube, etc.
No one would have guessed that.
Yeah. Nobody could have seen that coming. No one. Not Doyle, not nobody. Certainly not. Not, you know, maybe Joseph Martinez. Final thoughts, guys.
Come with final the king, best not miss.
Yeah, exactly. Who's wearing the crown? I think we figured that part out. What's your final thoughts, Doyle? What does this leave you with? And now what are you thinking about as we wait a week for the next match?
I mean, it leaves me wanting more. I'm still a little frustrated at the initial squad selection. Having four center forwards and only two actual wingers is maybe coming back to bite the U.S. a little bit. I'm a little frustrated at no Williamson today. I still think there's a sensible, like, good team in there that can play fun soccer. And I'm just hoping that that's what we get to see in the quarterfinals against either Jamaica or Costa Rica. Because if you just play like a straight up 4-3-3, you can put the pieces out there that make sense and that kind of create the game. And we haven't done that much so far in this tournament.
I think that watching this game, the thing that came to mind was, I think every player out there that I thought was the best player on the field played college soccer. So we've still figured out nothing and everything still matters. And I just love this region and the chaos that it causes.
Shout out to the Orange Men of Syracuse. Tejan.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Come on, Miller. Miles Robinson.
Kyle Larin, little UConn Husky. Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Hey, they still got it.
BC guys. BC guys, Charlie.
Shout out to Matt Turner and Fairfield. Like, come on. Right? What? No, college soccer still can produce some gems. That's for sure.
Don't give me the ACC spiel right now.
I'm not. I ended at that. What I will say is this U.S. team needs to pick it up. You got through the group stages. Everyone's got their feet wet. They had a chance to experience what international football is like, especially in CONCACAF. Now, everyone raise their game, raise the level. there's got to be more aggression in the press. There's got to be more aggression in attacking the opponent's goal and taking players 1v1 and combining. There has to be more than let's just go out there and keep the ball and you know, show that we have quality. No, it's got to be much more. There's got to be urgency to show everybody they're the best, that they're trying to get a result, that it's not so much let's just be, you know, complacent or
good enough.
Good enough. Yeah. Be better than that. So that's my two cents there when I watched the three games in the group stage.
I'm
just curious to see where Berhalter lands. What he learned in these three games and now what it tells him about how he should approach the other ones. Like, what is his conclusion? How does it change his lineup selection and his tactics? What does he change, if anything, and who are the beneficiaries of that and who makes themselves the beneficiaries? As Charlie said, who comes in and says, this is my game. We wanted more from Kellen Acosta in this game. He has an opportunity to push himself into a very important position, whether it be a starter or not, on a World Cup qualifying team. That has to change history. It has to flip the script. It has to get there. So I want to see who sees the opportunity for what it is and doesn't just talk about it or be in the conversations on Twitter or get hyped up, but actually comes in and grabs it and says, no, I need to be there in September. Look what I can do in these scenarios. Look what I can give you when it matters more than this. Bring me. Let me help you get there. And for Canada, I think it goes the exact same way. They're looking for, as you all said, the pieces that can get them to the promised land. And it's been far too long for them. And we all know they're going to be there in 2026. What can they build on? All right, that's it from us. Anything else?
I'll add this. I'm surprised that Matthew Hoppe didn't get a start next to DK because of – His typical runs are just very direct. I think he's shown well since he's played. He's done enough to warrant more minutes. I'm a little bit shocked. So give me some more attacking flair. I want to see Joaquini out there, Hoppy, DK, let's go. Let's get people in behind, stretching the back line, and then the midfield to have that much more space.
All right, that's it from us. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Talking MLS Week 13, Gabriel Heinze and Joseph Martinez. All the headlines, and we'll be back next Sunday. So stay tuned. Mondays and Thursdays, Extra Time, anywhere you listen to podcasts, on YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, breaking down everything happening in Major League Soccer. And right now, everything in the Gold Cup. Vamos El Salvador. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Finish the top Group A just for the lulz. All right, everybody, have a great night. Enjoy the soccer. We'll see you tomorrow.